What? What a week.
I'd
oh
like
my
to say,
goodness.
Before we begin this, we are recording at 3:02 on Friday, December 9th.
Yeah, we just had some cool news break. And if we recorded when we were gonna today, we would have missed it, which it would have been really frustrating. But there is so much here this week. I'm excited. We got so much to talk about. Well, how's your week going?
My week's been great. You know, it's finals week here at Wagner, and that means I do nothing but study for my physics exam until Tuesday.
Yes, so that's awesome.
That's kind of it for me.
That's pretty great. Yeah, I've had we got my a cappella winter concert tonight, so I was just working on some arrangements for next semester today. But I'm busy, RN. It's I haven't eaten lunch yet. That's 3, which stinks, and I haven't showered yet. I didn't have class, which was fine, but I got a lot to do today because I gotta go over at like 4:30. So so awesome. But let's get into the thing that is Broadway. I'll just start you off with some fast facts. Lots of fast facts because we have lots of regular facts. So I tried to throw a lot of the like cool things into fast facts that aren't like really cool things. So I'm going to start with A Beautiful Noise reviews are in. They're mixed. But Neil Diamond showed up for opening night and sang Sweet Caroline, which he hasn't done in about 5 years or something. Wow. just because of his growing old. And I think he has, just for medical reasons, he hasn't been able to perform or anything. So he's like super retired. The new Queens of Six are here. The Pulitzer Prize winning play Fat Ham is coming to Broadway for limited engagement starting on March 21st. Apollo Levine, an OG cast member of MJ, is going back to the show, but he's going back to the show in different roles. There's a really good article which Mark Shaman and Scott Whitman of Some Like It Hot address and respond to some of the potential controversies that people are talking about with the show before the show opens, just to try to, you know, get that out of the way. I would note a majority of the people who saw the show and have an issue with the issue with Some Like It Hot is there is people when it was originally done, it was kind of poking fun at the fact that men were wearing dresses and were disguising themselves as females in order to just as a plot point in the show. And people were taking that as like, oh, ha ha, funny men in dresses. And they kind of explain why that's in the show. And they explain that it's now taken in kind of a different context. And all the people who have seen the show that I have listened to talk about this say, hey, they handled it really well. And it's not actually. It's more, oh, the characters realize in the end that they actually enjoy this different identity, and it actually brings them a lot of different, I don't know, just different emotions. And so I have no idea. I can't comment. This is just what I'm hearing from other people.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of the same things.
Yeah. So I would love to see it to get my own opinion, but so far I don't have one. Leo Poldstadt is extending until July 2nd. Hell yeah. Joshua Henry is releasing a new single called Can't Nobody Tell Us Nothing on Tuesday, the 13th of December. The Museum of Broadway, which we've talked about on here for a little bit, has offered new tickets, a new student and senior tickets. Seniors are going to get $32 tickets and students at $29 tickets. Yay, accessibility. Mm. Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS raised $5,107,791. Guess how much of that came from Music Man? $2 million, just from Music Man. That's just from Music Man.
And that's just half of that is just two of his hats. That's really it.
I know. Two of that. So we got like, you know, a quarter of this $5 million being Hugh Jackman's hat. And the rest of it is the other 30 shows on Broadway. Yeah. Finally, Ohio State Murders opened last night.
I think it was last night. Yeah.
Yeah. But pretty cool. And so I said last week on here that I was going to be kind of educating our audience on everything that's going on with K-pop and everything that's going on in that sense. So I just kind of wanted to give a rundown. It actually came at a pretty, I'm not going to say fortunate or unfortunate timing, but we got more news about K-pop this week as I was going to start explaining this anyways. But the producers of K-pop requested an apology from New York Times critic Jesse Green for his review on the show. The producers called the review, quote, casual racism, but made sure to quote they, quote, respect Mr. Green's right to be critical of the show. But they had a specific issue with Jesse Green calling their lighting design of the show, quote, squint-inducing, which the producers took as a play on the harmful stereotype of Asian people. And so Jesse Green explained in his review that non-Korean speakers aren't going to enjoy the show as much because they don't speak the language. And the producers say, quote, is a Broadway show valid only if it is centered on and catering exclusively to a white English-speaking audience? Which I personally believe is very valid.
Especially if it's a musical about something that is not.
Right, right.
Like, typically done in English.
Right. Just because we're physically putting up the show in the United States does not mean, like, you need to just disclude everyone else in the world. No.
Exactly.
What else? The last line of their letter is, quote, on behalf of our talented and dedicated cast, crew, and creative team, we urge you to acknowledge and apologize for the offensive language and racist implications in Mr. Green's review. By calling this out, we hope to challenge the Times, your writers and readers, and ourselves as well, to think critically about the issue of language. I don't want to misquote this, and ourselves as well, to think critically about the language we use and to be very mindful of bias, unconscious and otherwise. End quote. The Times responded to this by saying, quote, we saw the open letter written about the Times' review of K-pop and quickly convened a discussion among editors and members of our standards department. This group was in agreement that Jesse's review was fair. More importantly, we wholly disagree with the argument that Jesse's criticism is somehow racist. We always welcome feedback and reaction to our journalism and have conveyed a similar reply to the producers who wrote the open letter. End quote. I've seen a lot of discussion on this, and it's kind of touchy because it's like, did he mean to be racist? Was that his intent? I don't know if I'd go there. Could it have been subconsciously? Sure, maybe. Do I want to defend Jesse Green? No, but I think the issue here is you shouldn't have this person reviewing this show. I think that's the issue, is Jesse Green doesn't know anything about K-pop, or I assume isn't very representative of who this show is meant for, him being a middle-aged white man. So I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's kind of a good way to put it, because it's difficult, because right. When it's a New York Times reviewer, you are getting the perspective that New York Times always brings.
Mm-hmm.
And it is for their readers and who they represent, but you make a good point of, like, this show isn't really marketed to that, mm-hmm. to those people.
Yeah.
And it's not marketed to them because of the things that they say. They are able to safely make the assumption that that group of people is going to be like, oh, why isn't most of it in English? I can't even enjoy it.
Right.
And, you know, like, oh, the lighting, it's too, like, I'm assuming he's saying, like, they do the technique where the lights kind of flash to the audience. Like, I don't know what he's saying,
uh-huh.
But there's definitely a better way to say it.
Yeah, another issue that I listened to Broadway Radio and Today on Broadway most mornings, and Matt Timoneni was talking a lot on that about him being like, the issue here is that shouldn't have gotten published, and it should have gone through, like, he's like, I can't believe an editor didn't read this and be like, we shouldn't call this show with a 99% Asian cast squint inducing. There's different ways to say what we want to say. And I agree with him there. It's just like, I just can't believe that you didn't catch this. Like, that's, I don't know.
Yeah. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. I don't know. But, the sad thing is, my next bullet point is that K-pop announced on Tuesday that they're going to be abruptly closing on Broadway after this week on December 11th. They will have played 44 previews and just 17 performances, regular performances. Their final performance on Sunday is going to be dedicated to their AAPI audience and community, offering those Asian American and Pacific Islander audience members 200 complimentary tickets to Sunday's show, which will have a talk back afterwards. So basically, if you are in the AAPI community and you want a ticket to that show, I'm pretty sure it's just free and you can just apply for it and go get it. but this is the first show to have a 99% Asian representation on stage. So this is a pretty tough thing to see go right now. K-pop,
exactly.
Yeah, K-pop's had a lot of talk around it just because of how important it is to Broadway right now. But we've seen in the grosses this show, and we'll get into the grosses this week. I understand why it's closing after this week, because they saw a pretty terrible decline.
Like, looking at the grosses is maybe for me one of the most frustrating parts, yeah, because we hear constantly about how the audiences of Broadway are like, we're begging for more representation in shows, and we're looking for all these things, and then mm-hmm. a show gives it to them and nobody goes.
Right.
And I'm like, right. Shows cannot rely on making no money.
I know.
And so if you beg and beg and beg for a show that provides like this kind of representation, like 99%, mm-hmm. that's incredible.
Yeah. I know.
And then you just don't see it. No mm-hmm. shit.
No shit. Right. I would agree. So I think we just have to take this as a win. And I think it's just, you know what? We K-pop got here. It came to Broadway and it ran and the world got to see it. Maybe not as many people as we would have liked. But I think you just got to be optimistic after this and just be like, you know what? We got this show to run on Broadway. That's as much as we take it as it is and just be like, okay, cool. Look at the bright side here.
Yeah. It sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But we can move on because there's so much news. Yes. This is my favorite news that came out this week. Into the Woods is going to be crossing the states and journeying through the woods all over the US of A. A production that started at Encores, transferred to Broadway, extended on Broadway, extended again, and is now going to be touring across the United States with a lot of the same leads and people who have stuck through everything. They're going to have the same what's his name, as Jack. You're going to be having Gavin Creel as Cinderella's Prince. You're going to be having Stephanie J. Block didn't stick with the production from the beginning, but you got a lot of the leads coming. Stephanie J. Block and her husband Sebastian Arcelus. You've got Kennedy Kanagawa coming in with Milky White. But despite some El Grosso numbers at the box office every week, I think this is a really smart move for the production because there is more demand for this show. There is
demand. It just, I don't think it's in New York. So this is really smart because people, especially if you're even farther away from New York, where like you really can't make it, like,
and
further
they're going
than
all
Boston.
Over the place.
Like people in Boston have the capability to once in a while go to New York and go see a show.
Yeah.
And so those people, if they're begging and like Stephanie J. Block is their favorite performer ever, and they just want to see her, they feel like they need to go to New York. And now those people who maybe live in California or they live in Chicago, they can see her perform, maybe for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And they've been watching clips of her for years and years and years.
Right. Right. And so, it's really interesting. I think this is a really, really smart move. But I wanted to play this clip from our podcast last week. Liam and I, kind of foreshadowed this, not in the best way for us, but I'm just going to,
kind of the opposite way.
I'm just going to roll this clip from our last week's episode titled The Wiz is Back. But I'm interested if they're going to keep the same company from the tour to Broadway, because you can't tour that with like Andre the Shields.
I don't think he would do that.
No, I don't think a lot of people would do that. If you want to cast like big stars aren't as willing to tour. They are maybe, I don't know.
It's the kind of thing.
I just think that's so funny how we're like, big stars aren't that willing to tour. I mean, like, I guess maybe. And then we see the entire Broadway company of Into the Woods be like, yeah, we'll go across the states.
Not
yeah.
good. Yeah, they listened and they were like, let's just prove them wrong.
No, and I love this. So this production is going to be touring here. I actually have them in front of me now. The majority of the stars. So Montego Glover is the witch. Stephanie J. Block is the baker's wife. Sebastian Arcelus as the baker. Gavin Creel as Cinderella's prince. And Kennedy Kanagawa, just to name a few. I noticed that there isn't an announcement yet for Rapunzel's prince. I don't remember if they have announced Cinderella, but I didn't write that down here. I'd be interested to see. I don't think Josh Henry would do it. I think he's also doing Beauty and the Beast, RN.
Maybe Andy Carroll?
Andy Carl. It's not Andy Carl, because Andy Carl, later on, I'll tell you, is going to do a production of Groundhog Day in the West End.
Right.
Him. Or maybe I didn't put that in here. Anyways, there's a production of Groundhog Day that's come to the West End. And so I don't know. I'm interested. Like, we might get a fresh Rapunzel's Prince, or maybe a bunch of the understudies who have been sticking with this show for a while are going to be getting the spotlight for this.
There's plenty of people who know those roles. Yeah.
This is from Talora Harms at Playbill. Quote, the tour will begin preview performances in Buffalo, New York prior to its opening. Following the Kennedy Center run in D.C., the tour has planned engagements at the Miller Theater in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Blumenthal Performing Arts Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, Niederlander Theater in Chicago, Curon Theater in San Francisco, Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles, and Emerson Colonial Theater in Boston, which is hype for me because that's where I just went and saw Six last week, and getting lottery tickets was not super hard for that. So hopefully
that theater too. That's a beautiful theater.
It's amazing.
Theater.
Like Citizens Bank Opera House and Emerson Colonial in Boston are our two regional theaters. And when I saw it was coming to Boston, I was like, oh, it's gotta be Citizens Bank. Because Citizens Bank is huge, huge. I think it's like 20,000 people or something. I remember I saw Dear Evan Hansen and I was sitting first row of the mezz, and I just looked back and I was like, how many people are in this theater? And I was just like, oh my God. Liam, fact check me on how many people are in this theater. But it's big. And so for them to come to the Emerson Colonial, which does have the orchestra.
Fact check, it definitely is not 20,000 people.
I don't know what because Emerson Colonial is much smaller, but it's got a balcony, which Citizens Bank doesn't.
Everybody got to hear how slow I type.
Let me see. For
2,600.
What? Yeah,
well,
I guess
you need
I'm
to think about
off.
It. I mean, like,
you're right.
Wicked
you're
only
right.
has 1,900, and that's the you're biggest right. theater on Broadway.
I don't know. I felt like it was huge. I guess it's not one half of
they
Fenway
are
Park.
Big,
that wouldn't
though.
Make sense.
I mean, like, yeah,
I don't know. My perception's off. Hey, but 2,600 is big. That's bigger than
that's huge
every Broadway theater. It's big. So I'm hyped for that. I'm definitely gonna buy tickets when they go on sale, but I'll probably also be entering the lottery every day and everything. But I did want to play one more clip. Theme Parks Entertainment on TikTok had a really good take on just some thoughts after this came out. Liam's making a face, but I just wanted to play this because I think it's really interesting.
You all, Into the Woods is going on tour, and this tour includes a significant amount of the Broadway cast, including Stephanie J. Block, Sebastian Marcellus, Montego Glover, Gavin Creel, and basically, the list is also pointed out. There is a break in the touring schedule during, point out one additional thing, which Brian, the business analyst, is also pointed out. There is a break in the touring schedule during Tony voting time. My thought is its intention is to come back to Broadway during that time period. I have no proof of that, but I'm saying that. I think they will literally just throw the tour set into any available theater at the time, assuming some production is going to flop and have a theater empty between now and then, with an attempt to get Tony Awards for this production and any returning original Broadway cast members. I mean, I could see Sarah Bareilles returning for this if she wants a Tony Award, and it would definitely sell. Anyways, go see this.
So I think that's interesting. I think that's
Not
very interesting.
Until the sky. Yeah.
Just if... It's just that's an interesting thought. There's a break in their schedule, and it's notably during a very important time. So yeah, maybe they will come and try to nab some Tony Awards, which is cool. I don't know.
I wish I listened to more of that. I was just vibing to the music.
No, yeah, but you can listen back. So yeah, it's just a cool take. I was like, that's pretty interesting. I'm sorry, I skipped around a little bit when I was recording that. So it kind of goes like in a sec. But Into the Woods touring, love it. Love it.
Let's go through this next point as fast as we can because I don't care.
Okay, you can take it. You want to make
all right? Bad Cinderella finished its casting with Carolee Carmello and Grace McLean joining. I trust Carolee Carmello with my life, according to Gavin. Tuck, Everlasting, Parade, Addams Family, Finding Neverland come to mind.
Oh yeah, I just wrote down some Carolee Carmello shows that came to mind. She was May Tuck in Tuck Everlasting.
Oh, and, yeah, she's and, fantastic. She's great.
And what's her face in Parade?
Who is Grace McLean?
Lucille. I don't know. Grace McLean? Let me look, because I probably should have done that. Grace McLean.
I don't know. Bad Cinderella. I'm just like, heart attack wouldn't happen. This is like, I'm waiting for the controversy with my boy ALW.
Grace McLean's playbill. Oh, she was in Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812.
Oh, who did she play?
Maria D. I don't know. Great Comet. That was just before I was this tuned into Broadway. So,
okay.
I also
know that character. But
she was Natasha Pierre.
I'm sure she's fantastic.
Right.
Was that original cast?
Yeah, that's what it said on there.
Oh, cool.
So pretty cool. And maybe I lied with Into the Woods being my favorite piece of news. But the next piece of news is that Ethan Slater.
Who's
Ethan
that?
Ethan Slater of SpongeBob. Ethan Slater. He is joining the Wicked movie as Bach, which is crazy to me because I assume that they would want to cast big names as all their leads. But this is perfect casting, and I'll tell you why. You have your huge stars in Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo that everyone knows. Ariana Grande more so than Cynthia Erivo, but still can bring in just any person who is tuned into what goes on in the world at all knows who Ariana Grande is. Oh, great. She gets to pull those people in. Now you need to appeal to the Broadway people who wanted to gatekeep Wicked and don't want everyone else to love Wicked as much. You need to give them someone who they wanted to gatekeep even more and can be their guy. Ethan Slater is our guy, and he's in this show, and it's amazing, and he gets to join all these other stars that got announced, such as Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, I'm the wizard.
And so, so I love Ethan Slater in this role. I love him. He is, like, I've just listened to so many podcast episodes of him, so many interviews, and he's such a cool dude. I'd love to get him on here at some point, just because he seems like such a genuine guy, such a nice guy to work with. And I saw this casting. It was just like, this is awesome. I just also love saying Ethan Slater.
Oh, the way awesome. The serotonin you get from saying Ethan Slater is the same feeling I get of like, yes.
And so I saw a funny thing, which is like, Wicked is now releasing their casting like an advent calendar, so we get more every day. So we got Ethan Slater the other day, and then it was announced the next day that Michelle Yeoh is going to be playing Madame Morrible. And
such good casting. She's so good.
Yeah.
She is going to be so good as Madame Morrible.
And then, Jeff Goldblum's the wizard.
Yes, he is.
He's done so much. I mean, if you're a Marvel person, if you're just a person, you know who this is. And yeah. These are two memeable people. Ethan Slater and Jeff Goldblum. Oh, it's awesome. We are still waiting on...
You can't sit still when you talk like him.
No, you can't.
Yes.
Come down to Oz. Oh. So super, super exciting stuff. We are still waiting on casting announcements from Dr. Dillamond and Nessa Rose. So cool stuff to come.
Well, we'll get those on the 14th and then the 17th.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The 25th will be the big one, you know.
Yeah, that'll be when you get, like, I don't know, there's a third movie! So these people.
Oh, I forgot it's gonna be two movies. Oh my god!
So actually, what's the timeline? I know the second movie comes out spring of 2024, or maybe it's next. It's a year from this, 2 years from this Christmas. Wicked movie release dates, but dates. The first is next Christmas, so Christmas Day 2024. The second will be Christmas 2025.
Wait. Christmas 24 is not next Christmas.
What? Oh, you're right. It's 2022, bruh. So yeah, the first will defy gravity on December 25th of 2024, which is 2 years from now. And then in another year, you'll get the second one. Whatever.
Okay, I just got a little bit more information on the Wicked casting.
What? Like right now?
Yeah, Kiela, is it Settle? I don't know. The woman from Greatest Showman and Waitress going to... I don't know.
Is this Nessa Rose announcements?
No. Here, look at this.
Oh my god.
This just broke.
Oh my god, wait, hold on. Let me go to Playbill.
Okay, you pull it up. I'd like to shout out my roommate, Nick Sokolowski, for showing that to me.
Wait, my Playbill doesn't have this. I'm going to Broadway World. Broadway World usually has stuff first. Wait, they don't have that either. Oh, wait, yes, they do.
Did this break 4 minutes ago?
Kiala Settle. Kiala Settle, Bowen Yang. Bowen Yang of SNL.
Yeah.
Well, of more than SNL, but of SNL. Oh, my God. But, Marissa Bode and more round out Wicked Movie Cast. Okay.
So, who is she playing?
Okay, so Bowen Yang and Bronwyn James will play Shiz University classmates. Wait. Kiala Seta will play Miss Coddle. Oh, man. We don't have... Okay, so we still don't have Nessa Rose and Dr. Dillon. Wait. Oh, wait. Why is a Jessica Vox video playing? I don't need that.
We do know, however, that Nessa Rose will be played by a wheelchair user.
Newcomer. Oh, amazing.
Oh, Marissa Bode. Okay. Okay.
That's is that in here?
Yeah, it just said Marissa Bode.
Oh, you're right. Marissa Bode is a disabled actress who has performed in musicals like Little Shop, Peter Pan, Mary Poppins, The Diviners. Her training in the arts comes from the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. Oh my goodness. She will be joining Vanessa Rose. That's amazing. This is awesome. I love that this broke on the pod. Wait, I love this is stacked, dude. Damn.
This is crazy.
That's awesome. We got more movie musical news after this too.
Oh, and this movie, okay, like Wicked, I'm waiting for it to hold a place in my heart because I'm going to see it for the first time on Monday.
Really? Are you really?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Well, because it's Michelle's opening night. So
it's her opening.
Like
that's amazing.
A group of like 70 of us going.
Seriously.
It's sick.
That's dope. Did you all sit 70. Together in the same section?
I don't know the number.
It's like 12.
I'm pulling numbers directly out of my ass. So
that's awesome.
Same with confidence. It doesn't matter if it's true.
Well, thanks to Nick for that.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah,
I would have missed
perfect.
That. And we would have had to include
Let's
that
do
next week.
Movie musical fun. And then the other
and then the last
movie
thing.
News.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So this news broke just as we were getting on as well. The Mean Girls movie musical has announced part of its casting, which includes Renee Rapp as Regina George, who has already played Regina George on Broadway. And in my opinion, is my favorite and most iconic Regina George. She took over for Taylor Lauterman, who originally played Regina George, and Renee Rapp did it. I think, did Renee Rapp play it up until they closed?
Mm-mm. Ooh, was she in when they closed?
I want to say yes.
I think Renee
Does
was
Nick
in
know?
When they closed. Yeah, she was.
Yeah. Okay, I thought so.
Thanks again to Nick, our fact checker.
Yeah, this is amazing.
We'll get him on the payroll soon.
My favorite piece of casting, Jackwell Spivey, who is playing Damien, who's on Broadway right now playing Usher in A Strange Loop, who was nominated for Best Leading Actor in this role. I love him. I'm seeing him next month, actually about just a month and a day. I'll be seeing him as Usher in A Strange Loop. I'm so excited because I love him. I love her. There's more casting to this, but those are just the big two that I wanted to name. If you want more, I don't know. I can't find it, but the movie musical written and produced by Tina Fey, who originally did the Mean Girls movie. It's kind of awesome. I love this. I think this will be fun. I think it's a really great casting choice to get these niche Broadway people like Jackwell Spivey and Marianne Rappin is not very niche, but this is just great casting. It's great. I love it. I love it so much.
Oh, well, there's also Ali'i Cravallo. Who's she playing in it?
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Isn't she Moana?
Was she the voice of
Moana? Wait, hold on.
Let me see tagged.
Titular character in 2016.
Yeah, she's Moana.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, that's dope. That's dope.
Who the hell is she playing? Come on.
Let's see. Okay, I just got something up.
The comments on this are so funny. No, because this casting slays the house boots. There it is.
She was seen as a lead. No, what? But what is she playing in this? I'm control effing her name and just finding it. Is it like not actually gonna say like what she played is playing? What? Who is she playing in the show? Wait, what? Whatever. We can update that next week if we want. But anyways, yeah, people who know this show inside and out will probably be able to guess. And
yes,
we'll know. But
I think she's one of the girls. She might be Karen. She might be. I don't know.
That's so awesome. That's great. And the last piece of news, which maybe isn't, because maybe we'll get more while we're sitting here.
Exactly.
This is pretty cool. So Theater Camp, which stars Ben Platt and new man's Noah Galvin, official man's Noah Galvin, who also wrote and helped produce it. They helped write and produce this alongside people like Will Ferrell. This is going to be premiering this January at the Sundance Film Fest. This film is about, quote, when the beloved founder of a rundown theater camp in upstate New York falls into a coma, the eccentric staff must band together with the founder's crypto bro son to keep the camp afloat. It is based on the short film that they made during COVID, which I watched, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. So I thought that's what it was. And I was looking into it more and became more confused. And
yeah, so it's just like based on what they did before.
I
love it. I think that's dope.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be great.
I love him, and I love that him and Noah are gonna be doing stuff together, which is pretty great. Yeah, they wrote and are helping produce and everything, which is great. I think we can call it a day for news, unless we want to get sprung with anything. I'm still waiting on Broadway World to give me notifications for these things, because I didn't get notifications for these other things. The notifications either come before I see it or like way after. So, whatevs.
To the grosses, my dear.
So, keep in mind with the grosses, friends. It was Thanksgiving last week and everything's going to be down. The things that are up means that they're actually up. You expect things to come down off the high of last week. So we'll take that with a grain of salt. People who are shows who had really, really, really bad weeks. Like, yeah, that's still a bad week, but
Gavin.
MJ. No, I know, Liam, it happened again. MJ was at 99.6% capacity. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk
4%
about
it.
4% capacity. Oh, 0.4%. We had two new shows join us. We had Between Riverside and Crazy and The Collaboration join us. The Collaboration came in at $208,000 with 6 performances, which, okay, word. And then we had Between Riverside
opened last time we went around.
Ohio State, I'm pretty sure, just had their opening the other day. So this is their opening week. And the Between Riverside and Crazy came in at 117,000 out of 6 performances. The only shows to not play 8 shows were Mike Birbiglia's The Old Band of the Pool, but he's only been on 7. Ohio State Murders had 6, which is 2 less than last week. Something Like It Hot had 7, which is 1 less than last week. And that's it. Some fast facts. The shows to sell out are The Phantom of the Opera, which was at 101.1%. And that's it. The most empty theater was Ohio State Murders this week, coming in at 45.5% capacity. Their grosses were down 14.23%. They did have 2 less performances, but I still don't think that's good because, you know, their attendance was it's not good. So,
yeah.
Whatevs. The top ticket this week was to Funny Girl, $599, which we've been seeing. Music Man was the most expensive show to go see with an average ticket price of $253. The ticket average was down in total for Broadway 11%. Grosses were down 10%. And we had 9 more performances on Broadway this week. Oh, I didn't do the full capacity number. Alexa, 264,069 is what percentage of 318,349? Nope, Alexa, stop. It's trying to give me million numbers, whatever. But capacity is probably down. It most likely is.
I'm not doing that math for you this time.
Yeah, I'm not. I could just do it really quick, but I'm just going to keep going. So the show that we saw the best spike in ticket sales was A Beautiful Noise, probably having to do with the fact that they opened. They were up 25.5% into the 90s from 65, which is amazing. A Christmas Carol's grosses were up 50%, which is also amazing. Their capacity, they went from 62% to 68%, which isn't nothing. That's good. And for it to be coming off of a tourism week for Thanksgiving is great. They just get to ride this Christmas high because that's what this show is.
I saw Christmas Carol 2 days ago.
Did you really?
It was fantastic.
Did you
it
really?
Was a
I
blast.
Didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Jefferson Mays, that just super quickly while we're doing the grosses, when they're saying like he plays over 50 parts and everything, I thought it was going to be like a comedic take where like he's like getting ripped out of costumes and is like blabbering around. But it was really seriously done and really like eloquently performed and directed. It was Michael Arden. So already obsessed with that.
Oh yeah.
And it was just so, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was so impressed with how they did it. I paid $35 for my ticket on TDF and checked later and it was worth $289.
Where are you sitting?
So, row F.
Oh, wow.
The orchestra.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. When you don't post playbill picks, I just have zero idea that you go see shows. I don't go see shows. I got to post playbill picks every time. You know, I got to add that to my revolving story of adding
playbill picks. I have them in my stories, but I don't always keep them up.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So
I still posted, but I deleted it.
Yeah. All right, no, I get it. So the shows that I had... I just flagged a few shows that rely on tourism, so kind of not copping them out for why they saw such a big decline in grosses, but Aladdin's grosses fell 20%, that relies on tourism. Beetlejuice's were down 20%, that relies on tourism. Chicago's were down just about 20%, that relies on tourism. Harry Potter's were down 30%, that relies on tourism. And K-pop's grosses were down 44%. They went from bringing in 224,000 to 126,000, which is really bad. So I don't want to give K-pop the loser just because I don't want to do that. I don't
know if we can do that.
I don't think we can do that.
They've taken enough hits.
I tentatively put Chicago in because they saw the biggest decline in capacity going from 91 to 78 from being 90s and just falling off of that is crazy.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago we saw, so week ending 11/27 had them coming in, or just the week before then was, so they went from 70% to 91% for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's gone back to 78. So net positive over the past few weeks, but it's just like, that's such a huge gap. What? It's kind of like that. So I gave them Chicago the loser this week. And then the champ, I think, can kind of go to a bunch of different shows. Top Dog Underdog had a great week. Their grosses were up 40%. Their house capacity went from 43% to 56, which, hey, isn't good, but is all right. Moulin Rouge had a good week. Leopoldstadt had a great week. I love seeing,
and they're extending so well. Too. They're extending far.
Yeah, they are extending far by a few months. And then A Christmas Carol and A Beautiful Noise. Maybe A Christmas Carol, just because their grosses were up so much. I'm gonna see if their average ticket price jumped. Their average ticket price this week was $85, and the average ticket price was $62 last week. So yeah, absolutely, that explains it. Yeah, you want to give A Christmas Carol the champ?
I'm very happy with that.
Hell yeah, Christmas Carol. What else? What else is there for grosses this week? I think that's kind of it. I don't know if there's any shows in particular I want to highlight. What about Funny Girl continues to just body. I mean, they sold a bunch more tickets. They went down in grosses, but ain't no thing.
How they do it.
I know, it's crazy, but a lot of shows saw almost like mid-20s in a gross drop, which just shows you the difference between last week and this week can be kind of catastrophic. Hadestown down 27%, Hamilton down 20%, Harry Potter down 30%, Into the Woods down almost 20%. Into the Woods, I will say, their grosses were down almost 20%, but their house capacity went from 61 to 68, which is 7%. Their average ticket price was $102 this week. And last week was 123. I mean, maybe that has something to do with it.
For me, even if you're making less money, more tickets.
More people seeing your show. Love it.
That's what I care about. I care about.
Kimberly Akimbo was net positive in everything this week. So love to see that. I think Kimberly Akimbo is just going to continue to be that show that everyone loves and wants to see do really well. I really, really hope it can get that recognition at the Tony Awards, maybe Best Musical or something like that. What else are we looking at with a good week? Mike Birbiglia was positive, which is awesome this week. He jumped into just about the 80s for capacity. MJ's grosses were down 11%, which sucks. That probably has to do with that 0.8% in ticket sales that dropped. They probably sold out all but one performance. It looks like they sold 11,055 out of 11,096 seats. So that's like, nothing. That's nothing.
When you're dealing with those kind of numbers, it's just splitting hairs at this point.
Yeah. So A lot of shows saw negative because they had less performances. Six was down this week, even though they introduced new queens, which is kind of surprising to me. Take Me Out saw a really good week. Their grosses were up 23.5%. Last week, their grosses were up. Last week, their grosses were actually down. So they kind of had an inverse of everyone else. They took a little bit of a hit during Thanksgiving, and this week did really well, which is pretty great. I think it might have been their official reopening night. I don't remember.
I think that was last week.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think they would have been not.
I don't follow plays as closely as musicals, as y'all know. Wicked.
That's because you're a bad person.
Yep. Wicked's was down 20%. Lion King's was down 20%. The Book of Mormon was 13%. So all these big heavy hitters kind of all swung in the same direction. Looking at Wicked, Book of Mormon, all that. Phantom was down 12%.
God, I cannot believe that the average ticket to go see Music Man is $250.
I know. It's crazy.
It's absurd.
It's crazy. Let me do a quick Excel lookup to see what the second most expensive show is. That is Hamilton at 206. What is the third? And then is Funny Girl at 179, and then the Lion King at 167. So yeah, just the difference between 253 to 206, which is Hamilton in second, is craziness.
Yeah,
it's craziness. It's gonna be interesting seeing the grosses once the Music Man comes off the books, because the Music Man broke 3 million this week. Music Man had a pretty positive week. They haven't broke 3 million in a hot second, if I do recall. I'm just kind of looking back here, and I don't see 3 million Music Man in a little while. No, hasn't happened in a hot sec. So pretty great. I mean, for them to be above $3 million really contributes to the grosses. Like the week that we lose Music Man in January is gonna be like.
Maybe a big culture shock right there.
Grosses are down 125%. Not actually, because that would mean no money.
It would mean they are paying people to see the shows.
But yeah, that's all I got.
I'm happy with that.
We had a lot of news, but we somehow didn't get sidetracked, so was able to get through all of it in our 40 minutes, which is pretty great. I'm kind of okay with that. But we got some really cool and exciting GWL stuff in the works, hoping to get some really cool guests on. And this winter break should be great. Just getting to do some more in-person podcasts. Maybe I think Christmas Eve is on a Friday, so maybe we could do a
holiday special.
We could get in like Christmas jammies, and we can play I'm kind of loving All I Want for Christmas Is You, but sung by Telly Lee Young. I kind of love listening to that. Maybe I could even play 0.5 seconds of it. It's kind of silly just because of the amount of runs and extra flair that he puts into it. I just think it's a fun.
Okay.
That's all you get. Hey.
All right.
But yeah, you know.
Inaudible. Alrighty.
There's a ton of Broadway people that have music like that. That's out. And Josh Henry's new single. I'm excited for that. That's gonna be dope because I love my favorites of his are Awe of Her and Hold Me, great songs. Anything else you?
I don't have anything else.
Yeah, I got 1 hour to get my clothes together, get my secret Santa gift packaged and ready, which is this Sunday in the Park with George CD for my friend CJ, because he loves Sunday in the Park with George. So in acapella, we're doing Secret Santa. So I picked up a copy of this from the 80s that I could find, which is cool. It has copyright 1984 on it, which I thought was cool.
It's a great album.
Gotta get my Christmas jammies ready, because our second act is Christmas jammies, and I gotta warm up and I gotta eat.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
But what a great week. Hopefully next week will be just the same.
Just peachy.
That's all from us, folks.
Alrighty.
Talk to you same time. Well, maybe like an hour later next week. Huh?